Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. It's your boy TP Thomas back at the helm. Waking up to a good little morning for myself, can't even front, but a lot of interesting things have gone on within my life. But welcome back to the Sunday morning brunch. We got you here for the next hour or so, locked and loaded in Sports City. And again, I'm at the edge of my seat. Can't wait to get into a lot of interesting things, some ups, some downs in the sport world. And I wish I had some of the interesting faces and people that are usually around Sports City because a couple of things went last night. But I do want to start off on an interesting note. Like I said last week, if you did hear the show, they laid my coach to rest yesterday, Mark Naismith. So I definitely want to give him a moment of silence and Joyce. She was laid to rest as well Friday. So Joyce McKeithen as well. So Mark Naismith and Joyce McKeithen, I definitely want to give y'all a moment of silence to set this show off right and jump into a lot of interesting things that went down this weekend. Okay, so we're going to get right into it. Like I said, a lot of interesting things went on. I do want to save a lot of the good dishes for the remainder of the show. First and foremost, in the boxing world last night, I can't even call this an interesting situation, but Tank handled his business, and if you don't know who Tank is, it's Gervonta Davis, a first-round stoppage up against Hugo Diaz, and I think that this was one of those fights where he had to, I don't really want to call it a stepping stone, but this was kind of like a tune-up fight to get him ready for some bigger and better names, and to me, I don't know if it's a collision course, if I could look at it like that, if I could try to see him and Lomachenko try to get after it because they are around the same weight. If they could try to fight at that same weight, it would be interesting. But I still give my favorite to Vasily Lomachenko because Lomachenko is extremely quick and he has power as well. But Tank has power that's stopping everybody. So that's a very interesting fight. But I don't want to take too much away from what Tank did last night and winning that fight and stopping Hugo Diaz in the first round. And the way that he took care of business up against Hugo Diaz, it looked like it was at least five rounds that went by. Beat his face pretty bad, and he was bleeding bad, and dropped him, and the ref waved it off, basically, because he basically looked like he couldn't withstand any more of the fight. So he did the proper thing to help the boxer before it got out of control. But I want to look past the situation of Gervonta winning this fight and knowing how his name has been one of the bigger names within his weight class moving forward. And like I said, the only person that's near him that I think could potentially try to make a monster mega fight between the two of them would be Lomachenko, but neither one of them had, like, interesting bouts that they've been going into with a guy that's been able to give them a challenge. I lose the guy's name that just fought Lomachenko recently, but he had a good reach toward him and, you know, set up a couple of interesting punches, but and made it a challenging fight. But still, yeah, Vasily was able to get the win. But I think that these two have to be on that collision course. These promoters have to try to set that up so these guys can continue, at least in that weight class, to stir up some interest and draw while the welterweight division is basically carrying boxing, even though you got some big names in the heavyweight division. But I think that Tank and Lomachenko could actually bring up the lighter weights in the boxing world. So that's first. We'll get that one out the way. The second one I have is Anderson Silva losing his fight in the UFC to Israel. I might butcher his name, Adesanya, in which watching this fight, Adesanya actually did an interesting number to Anderson Silva, was getting through on a couple of his strikes I can't even say injuring, but bruising Anderson Silva to the point where his eye was close to closing. And at the end of the fight, it was almost like Anderson Silva was showing appreciation to Israel and almost like passing the torch. So I don't know what this shows or spells toward Anderson Silva, but a true gentleman, and I'm not going to lie, I'm a big Silva fan, and I wanted to see him try and win this fight because I don't know too much about Israel, but Israel did what he needed to do. A lot of the judges had him convincingly winning majority of the rounds, but Anderson Silva, before the weigh-in, during the weigh-in, excuse me, I'm saying it wrong, shed tears during the way. And so I don't know how to, I don't know what this is spelling. If this is the end of Spider's career, I am a huge fan of his and what he was able to do in whatever form he was in the Octagon or UFC, or I doubt if he fought Bellator, but true fan of his. And we'll see how this moves forward for Israel, and I'm waiting to hear as much as I can about Anderson Silva moving forward, especially with, I mean, the injury that we all remember with him and Chris Weidman fighting a few years ago, and him having, I don't know what type of rod it is within his, like, his shin area, but I don't know if age is playing a factor because he is older now, or if his body is slowing down, things of that nature, or he's just considering that, you know, the sport may not be for him. But excellent showing last night in both fighters, but Anderson Silva with a loss last night to Israel Adesanya. If I'm butchering it, I apologize. I do see you, buddy. You did do well up against a fighter that I thought was extremely dangerous within the network. Okay, so before we get ready to jump into a lot of what went down yesterday, I do have another Silva in the building. We have Nacho in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
You know, I'm feeling amazing. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling better. Got a little sick this weekend. My kids were involved in a minor car accident. Everybody's feeling good. Everybody's feeling better. So we're all, you know, pushing forward. All praise be to God and Jesus and all that good stuff. Moving on from that, last night was an event-filled night. Was it Whitaker or Gastelum? I can't remember which one had to pull out for the hernia. So
Whitaker,
that ruined the main.
Out.
Yeah, Whitaker had to pull out for the hernia. So that kind of ruined a little bit of the main event for me, but I was still more excited to see Silva. My goal was to watch that fight. For me, it was watching exact mirror images of each other, 143-128. The reason why I think Israel did not win the way people anticipated and the way Silva did not look the way he anticipated is because they were fighting each other. If you look at that fight again and watch it from beginning to end and don't listen to anything, mute it, and just watch these two fight, it is uncanny the way the unorthodoxness of both of these fighters. It is ridiculous. Spinning heel kicks, feint kicks to the leg that go up to the head, feints, hand movement, head movement, body movement. I mean, these two were just amazing. It was like watching two men caught in the Matrix. It was just an amazing fight to watch. I know a lot of people didn't enjoy it because there wasn't knockdowns. There wasn't a bunch of flailing and a bunch of, you know, just wild swinging because these are two calculated men who pretty much one dominated the sport for the greater part of 10 years and one who I believe is on that path. Mr. Anderson Silva from Pride till about 2006 and 2006 till now in UFC, I've been a huge fan. Obviously when he came to the UFC, he changed the game, the undefeated streak, the times defending your title streak that was just recently broken by, I think Demetrius Johnson, that took a long time for him to beat that. It's just, there's scenes that we can look at him and go, he's the GOAT. Oh, yeah, we talk about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, we're talking about Anderson Silva. We're talking about UFC, we're talking about Anderson Silva. It's one of those things that at the end of the day, there's no doubt in my mind, the Mount Rushmore of the UFC fighters, Anderson Silva is one of those names. We can debate whether you want the other three to be, but I just don't think that anyone can debate how great that man was. And if it wasn't for his arrogantness and his cockiness and his full belief in himself, he dominates Chris Weidman and he moves on. But we saw what happened. He just thought he was the king of all gods, dropped his arms for approximately 1 minute and 30 seconds and an entire fight against one of the top fighters on his feet in Chris Weidman, and he got clocked. Last night he did it again. He did it again several times against Israel Adesanya, and was able to take a couple because he moved his head slightly and they didn't land flush, or because he completely dodged. At 43 years old, he is dodging with his hands down a 28-year-old man's punch who's got 3-inch reach advantage on him. Just a testament to how great this man, Anderson Silva, was. Conversely, Israel my goodness, it was like watching the younger version of himself. And if you can just get better and get better and do what you did last night, you will dominate this sport for years to come. The reason I give Israel the win is the activity-ness, or the activeness, I mean. He was just more active in that fight. If I felt that Anderson Silva was willing to get countered like he had in the past, it might have been a different fight. I think Anderson knew that if he would have tried to go in and attack, he did a few times. He paid for it a couple of times, but he realized that in order to beat him, he was going to have to let Israel make a mistake, and he just didn't make a mistake that fight, big enough to cost him one. Israel did. So Israel did just an amazing fight last night. I guess, the last style bender, as they like to call him. And, again, I'm just excited to see who he's got next. Wrapping that up, just a great fight and a great, you know, a nice slew of fights. There was some good ones in there. After the fight, though, Mr. Anderson Silva is not retiring. He is looking forward to talking to Dana White. He's already talked to his team and I believe the other owner. They're looking to talk to Dana White, let him fight. And I believe it's Cuberito, Brazil. And he wants to fight Nick Diaz. And he wants that fight, and he wants to fight in his home, and he wants to make that happen. So I believe the greatness, the legend that he is, the Hall of Famer that he is, if Nick Diaz agrees to it, I believe Dana White will give him that fight. We'll watch his last fight in his hometown of Cuberito, Brazil. If I'm butchering that, I'm sorry. But, yeah, I definitely am excited to see his last fight. Hopefully he goes out on a win. If not, he goes out in spectacular fashion like Anderson Silva has done over the course of his career.
Okay, and I don't know if you caught the Gervonta Davis fight up against Hugo Diaz. I mean, your thoughts on it, if any, and any fights that you see potentially happening in the future?
I did not catch a lot of it, and I'm kind of glad I didn't after watching it afterwards. To me, it was a medium risk, medium reward fight for Tank. I don't call it low because I think the guy he fought was pretty good. He wasn't a great fighter, but a pretty good one. So, yeah, it was a medium risk, medium reward, and he took full advantage. Big boy Loma's coming, and I don't say that, because he's definitely not a big boy. But when it comes to big names right now, that's the man you got to beat with the smallest record. It's really weird, but he is he's the man to beat right now, in my opinion. So if you want to take on the best right now, you got the warm-up fight. You take on Loma the first chance you get. You try to get one of those titles, and you see where you go from there. Loma's got three titles. He's got a defense coming up. So I know there's going to be guys trying to itch at him. But, yeah, to me right now, for Tank, he's got to take on Loma, and then we'll talk more about that one because I think that's the main prize fight. I'm actually willing to pay to see that one.
Definitely. Hopefully they get it going because these two have been talking. Well, not I think more or less Tank's been defending himself and Lomachenko throwing like those little slips. It's not even really like tough talk. It's a very interesting situation, and hopefully they can set it up because at the lighter weights, they're the biggest names, and it's like who's the next challenge for these guys? With everybody that they've gone up against with no big stature or big name, they've taken care of, and it's like everybody's waiting to see the big fight between the two of these guys. So hopefully they can get it done. Hopefully within this year, this calendar year. If not, then they're going to continue to get the picks that they need to keep adding wins to their standings, if you will, or their win-loss record. And their fight has to potentially happen. I mean, they can't stay away from each other for too long. And out of both of them, Lomachenko is the older boxer, but I don't want to call Lomachenko old. I don't want to say he's old, but like he's older than Tank. But they definitely have to get this thing going. Okay. A lot of interesting things went on, especially as of yesterday. News in the football world before I get away from it because it's a very interesting one to me, like personally, and I'm going to I can't even really be too analytical about it because nothing has really happened, but Brian Flores, the linebacker coach from the New England Patriots, has now gotten the head coaching job down there in Miami. So it's very interesting to see if the tables or the tide may change in the NFC East, knowing that he knows a great deal about what's going on in New England and knowing that Miami does somehow, some way get a game, or if it can happen out of the New England Patriots in the AFC East, they do make it difficult for them. But in addition to the Miami Dolphins is what had my eyebrows raised to see if they could actually turn things around offensively. They add Jim Caldwell, the former head coach of the Detroit Lions. So he is down there in Miami too. So this, I don't know. They're getting rid of Tannehill. I don't know if the Dolphins listen to me, but they're getting rid of that $100 million contract to Ryan Tannehill. So waiting to see what quarterback runs the show as of this upcoming September, and if they, you know, are ready for Jim Caldwell's, you know, system, if you will, or his offensive prowess, and seeing if they can turn things around and try to stop the evil empire. I don't even know what to call him anymore. like I don't even think it's an evil empire anymore, just to stop the Patriots, period. Like, that's what it may be. But your thoughts on Flores, the coach that was just with the Patriots, and it's interesting because a lot of the assistants and, you know, coaches or, you know, coordinators, things of that nature that come from the Patriots, they have a great resume because they're with the Patriots. And then when they go somewhere else, they may be successful. I'm not even going to take too much away from a lot of these guys and what they were able to do in their careers, but it doesn't pan out to postseason wins and trying to get a Super Bowl or things of that nature. But your thoughts with Brian Flores, and if you'd like to add anything else toward Jim Caldwell being here as well.
I'm sorry I missed the Jim Caldwell news. Real quick, I'll get on the Brian Flores thing. To me, this is what stinks for guys that go from the Belichick regime or coaching staff to somewhere else is, like players, Bill Belichick treats his coaches the same way. If you don't know how to do something, if you are unaware of how to get things done in a certain aspect of the game, you are not going to coach that aspect of the game. You're not going to try to get better at that aspect of the game. You're not going to try to learn how to not be as poor in whatever it is you do. So if you're a defensive head coach, you're not going to learn how to do offensive things or how to run offenses or how to run an offensive practice or be a head coach. I think the problem with coming from the New England Patriots is that Bill Belichick, to an extent, coddles, but to an even greater extent, uses coaches and players to the best of their own abilities. And then when you leave and you go and take a head coaching job at another franchise, you're not going to have the stability of every single person just doing their job. You are now the person to make sure everyone does their job. You are now the main guy. And I think that's the problem we see with all these coaches that leave the Patriots, is that they're ill-equipped to become head coaches because their whole sole purpose was one aspect of the football, whether it be the quarterbacks, whether it be the wide receivers, whether it be a defensive coordinator job or whatever. I think the smartest man we've ever seen come out of New England is Josh McDaniels. Why? Because he's gone back and hasn't left yet. 2 years in a row, Mr. Josh McDaniels has had, I'm sure, great offers to be head coaches, but he knows damn well and good that without Bill Belichick, he is a nothing coach. We've seen it time and time again. So he is what I would call the greatest person to ever come out of the Bill Belichick regime because he knows now he should have never left. Do I think it'll be the same with Brian Flores? Yes, I do. Do I think that the defense in Miami will get better? Yes, I do. But I think they'll have major problems offensively. They'll have turmoil offensively, inability to score points. And unless they have the Ravens of 2000 defense or the 85 Bears defense, it's going to be hard for them to win multiple games, string some win streaks and get to the playoffs. So he will be looking for a job in the next couple years. Hopefully, Bill Belichick's looking for another DC and he can go run back to Bill Belichick. But as we see, again, I'm not going to denigrate these guys' talents at what they do, because when they leave and they go to these new teams, whatever they were good at, they're still good at. Josh McDaniels has gone to other teams and their offenses has flourished, but as a head coach, the defenses and the special teams and everything else that goes with it was left in turmoil because he's not good at that. And it goes around the league to everyone else that is left the Bill Belichick regime. They're great at what they do. They're just not good at anything else as it pertains to being a head coach. So when we see guys leave, if they go for what they're going for, so, you know, if Brian Flores, I know it's, you know, impossible or improbable to think of a guy leaving for the same position, but if he goes down to Miami to take a DC job, then I believe that their defense will be good and he'll be good at what he does and you know, things of that nature. But to me, that whole Bill Belichick regime is a little bit coddled by the fact that they're only allowed to do what they're good at and not able to progress in places they may be lacking to progress their careers as coaches.
Fair enough. I mean, and it's true because I think out of any of them, I think Bill O'Brien has been the most successful out of them, but you can't really mm-hmm. put together the postseason wins for what he's been able to do down there in Houston. I mean, they've had a great season this season, but fell short again in the postseason with an offense and a defense, and it happened in the first round, no less, especially being at home, too. So we'll wait to see that turnaround. The McDaniel situation, especially with him trying to – well, not even him trying to, but the coach trying to approach him, and he stayed away from it, him going to Denver, and it didn't work out. And I think that his best success was running with Tom as best as he could see fit, because I think that the potency of what they were able to put together and knowing their personnel and to make this thing work is another thing. But I can't be too mad at the assessment. I think Brian Flores is a interesting pickup for Miami, even though Miami lost a good deal of pieces defensively, and knowing that that's what he focuses on the defensive side of the ball. So waiting to see if that defense could turn around and getting a guy like Jim Caldwell as well to see what he can stir up offensively, especially probably with a new face behind center and trying to get this thing afloat. I want to say within a 1 to 2 year. I don't even want to be too brutal and say this is a 2 year window of working, trying to put this into play. But I'll say 1 to 2 just to be fair for the Miami Dolphins. And then I know probably after the third or fourth year, if there's no success, that's when the, you know, upper management will start to look at the situation and try to either make a break or add to it or take away from it. But we'll see if this is potential for the Dolphins to start to knock off Tom Brady. I would even try to say to show the decline, but I don't even want to threaten that out of Tom Brady. So I'm just waiting to see how this does end up panning out. Anything else outside of that Dolphins situation before we get away from it?
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay, so to the hardwood, a.k.a. the National Basketball Association, a lot of interesting things went down. First and foremost, I want to say to me, the interesting thing in the National Basketball Association was not only was it probably the biggest point differential on the evening, but this situation, it has my eyebrows raised. Because this is serious. The Boston Celtics at home were up 28. Damn it, should just say 30 if I want to, but I'll just say 28 just to be fair. We're up 28 in a game up against the Los Angeles Clippers who traveled across country. Not to say that was a specific path, but just to feel the situation out. They end up losing this game by 11. Not only did they lose the 28-point lead, they lose this game by 11, but interesting enough, I don't even want to totally talk about the lead that they lost or how much they lost by. Kyrie Irving sprains the knee, and I think this is the same knee that went out of place 3 years ago when the Warriors and the Cavaliers went at it, and he didn't play after game one because it happened on the floor. In which once he went out, that's when the point differential broke apart. This is why I'm saying this is the more focal situation because there's a lot of things that happened last night, and I do want to get into all of it. But your thoughts on Kyrie spraining his knee and waiting to hear more about the timetable of the injury and knowing that there's a lot of disgruntled Celtics players, including Marcus Morris, one of the twins, saying that there's a bunch of individuals on the Boston Celtics team. He says that they're not a team at this point in time, especially with probably their floor general, their floor general off the floor again, And with everything that's possibly swirling around in the summer, not to say that this goes all the way until the summer, I think Kyrie will definitely be back. I just want to hear more about the timetable on when he does get back. But with him being out, with everything that's shaking up in Boston, if Coach Stevens could slow this situation down or get this thing corralled, but for them to lose a big lead like this at home up against a Clippers team that just lost a bunch of players in the trade deadline situation, your thoughts on Boston and Kyrie's situation as well?
You know, the Boston situation, I didn't have a chance to watch the game. I was kind of following it on the app and seeing the Celtics pull away and go, okay, well, this thing is pretty much over. No need to follow that. And then you get the update, okay, well, it's a close game now, and you're thinking, what the hell happened? You have so many questions that it's hard to answer. My thing is, it's just hard, man. You got a West Coast team coming to your house. You got a big lead. You just got to hold on to it. I don't know if this is, the Kyrie situation. I don't know if it's everything going on around the league where everyone seems to be making moves in the East except them. Everyone seems to be getting better. They seem to be having just more turmoil and turmoil, losing big games and then losing a big lead. And then not only losing a big lead, but losing a big lead and then losing by double digits. What was it, 123 to 111 or something like that, 112? It's just you don't do that at home. So I think that's the bigger situation there. My thing with Kyrie is what's going on. Like you say, it's such a weird situation going on. They've got not only what was going on with the trade situation and how they were willing to give up some of the younger talent and someone like a Jason Tatum, who seems to be overwhelmingly the new son of Boston, and you're willing to give him up for AD, and then now that's out the window. Now Kyrie's situation, is he going to be, is he gonna not going to be? I think you're more on the optimistic side, thinking he'll stay. This is a team to me that has first round knockout all written all over it, and the potential to lose Kyrie in the summer to me. So this has to play out. We have a lot more basketball left to go. Again, I'm not too versed on everything Kyrie in Boston right now. Just the fact that I'm watching this game, so to speak, on the phone, and like any other situation, you look at the big lead and you're thinking, okay, this is Boston, they'll put it away, and they lose big, and you're like, okay, does this have anything to do with the Clippers? No, this is everything on Boston. So again, not taking much away, not trying to take everything away from the Clippers, because they were on the court that night too and they have to play. But you think of the Boston doesn't have all the thoughts in their mind and everything going on, also with losing again. Not just, this isn't the first time. They've been doing this multiple times this season. So I wonder if a lot of that's on their mind. And then, of course, the Kyrie situation. It's just too much. I think the team's not as mentally strong as we think they are.
Yeah. Well, I thought they had it, especially in a game where I saw last week, and knowing I was watching it closely, where the Thunder came into town up against Boston, and they played an excellent game on both sides of the ball. And Boston was able to hold off the Thunder, and a late turnover by Russ ended up happening in the game. And they looked like they had it together. But then as time goes on, you start to see the real issues that are going on, whether it's within the locker room or happening on the floor during game day. But now with Kyrie being out and all of the I don't really want to see, let me just say the free agency market that's swirling in the potential summer that's coming this summer. With they're saying that he may go here, he may go there, or if he stays, if he could potentially get another piece in Boston, which I feel like they have enough pieces in Boston. They're playing exceptional basketball. I can't even overlook what they're doing in the Eastern Conference, but it's interesting that this is what's going on right now. So I did want to pose that situation, because it's not only just the fact that they lost a huge lead last night at home, but the biggest name on their roster, I have to say it like that, the biggest name on their roster is out with a knee sprain, and I just want to wait for the full timetable to see how long this injury lingers for Kyrie. But damn near 30 points for a team that potentially can win the Eastern Conference if they get the thing to come together at the right time is interesting enough. But like I said, I want to hear more about the timetable of this injury, because this is huge for him, especially within a 4-year realm of this happening while he was with the Cavaliers, and now this happening in the midst of Boston. And he's, and I don't even want to paint this picture, but it's true. Kyrie is injury prone. Like, this is something that, mm-hmm. that I have to throw to him. Is like, I can't even say teams are taking a shot on him because he's an all-star. He's a superstar, and he brings a lot to the floor. One of the more unguardable point guards in the league if you don't try to trap him or close in on him because it's crossover. He knows how to finish with his layup game, things of that nature. But last year he missed the playoffs. This year he's missing time because of his knee. He missed, just like I said, 3 years ago while the first run that the Cavaliers got to the finals up against Steph Curry and the Warriors, his knee popped out of place. And, you know, him coming out of college, I mean, him coming out of college, he was injured. So, like, this is something that I don't feel comfortable saying, but he is an injury-prone guard. So not only do the other teams that are interested in bringing him there have to think about that, which I think there's probably more than half of the league that want a Kyrie Irving, but also Boston has to consider this too on his usage rate while he's out there on the floor.
Exactly. I mean, the whole Kyrie Irving situation is one that's real interesting. And not only because Danny Ainge comes out and says, yeah, it's like an engagement, and on July 1st we're getting married, and then promptly Mr. Kyrie Irving hurts his knee. Those situations come up, and now you have to wonder, okay, do you still feel the same way, Mr. Ainge? Or is it because it's his non-knee, the other knee, so to speak, the one that's constantly hurt? It's the opposite one that he's hurt now. So when you get into things of that nature, when you hear Ainge say that, so you think that, okay, Boston's going all in on this kid and they're going to go after him. But if Kyrie gets, you know, hurt again, how does Boston, you know, show up to the table at that point? Do they even show up at all? But if they do they show up with something that's very, very injury laden contract? If you get hurt, you don't get paid. If you get this, you don't get paid. However, if you play this many games, you get lots of money. Is this where we see a very, you know, incentive laden contract for him? I know it's not as popular in the NBA, but for him, the overwhelming talent and the overwhelming quote unquote clutchness that this man has almost overweighs his inability to play because of injury. But you have to make it cost efficient for your team. If you can figure out a way to then make it that if he is gone and he does miss time, you're not still paying him an exorbitant amount of money, and you could still go get someone to help you out if you haven't already have that person on your roster, if you're not a smart enough team to have a backup for him to know that he's going to probably get hurt. My thing is with Kyrie is there a team out there that's dumb enough to throw the cash at him and not have the wherewithal to think that this man's going to stay healthy all 82 right. games and into a playoff season? That's where it gets real iffy, because if somebody is quote-unquote not that smart and they want to throw him a max contract with nothing on the back end, and he's guaranteed all this money and whatever, we get to game 45 and he tears that other ACL or he does something again, God forbid, I'm not wishing any injury on this man, but we've seen it time and time and time again. We just have to realize there are certain people like a Derrick Rose, like a Kyrie Irving, like a, you know, player like those, and there are many other names we can go down, high talent players, high injury prone, whether it's because of the way they play, whether it's because of the way that their body's built, or a combination of both things, they just can't stay healthy. But their talent overweighs it. Again, Derrick Rose to a lesser extent, Kyrie to a more extent. Yeah, there's teams out there that I do believe will walk to him and say, we will offer you the max contract, just come put this jersey on and play for us. And I think that that's what's going to waylay Boston, because Boston's not going to try, especially after this knee injury, and God forbid, but we already know it may happen again. But if that happens again, this is two times in the same year. What is it, four times since he's been there, and it's just too much, too much. And then now this team is rocking, and they need someone like him in the playoffs to even have a chance at hoisting that trophy.
Okay, so I'm going to get away from that Boston situation because, like I said, I want to hear more about it. It's fresh. It just happened last night, so that dish is kind of to be continued. I just want to see the timetable of this, because right now it's in front of All-Star Weekend, so he gets a break also, you know, so he's going to be out for the duration until next week. All-Star break comes, and then I want to see how many more weeks he may potentially be out. Because if so, this starts to run into the month of March while everybody's trying to make that last-minute run to positioning for the playoffs. That's right. I should play the clip. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to leave it alone. But, you know, for the last-minute run, if he's out for a month or 3 weeks, I just want to hear the duration, because this is the same scenario Boston is in front of for the second year. And in the second year, it's like, did they get what they wanted out of Kyrie, because he has not been there in the postseason for this team at all. At all. The move just happened just a few years ago. So, and last year he missed the entirety of the postseason due to injury, and this is lingering now. And they're going to have to keep him off of it, try to get him the therapy to get him back in the ballgame. But we'll get into it. Like I said, this is a dish to me continue to have to put this away, and hopefully we can put this back out here for the people. Another situation that actually made my eyebrows raise as well, the team that's in first place in the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks at home, right? Now don't get me wrong. Things happen. Teams lose, so on and so forth. We've heard of and seen crazy things happen, right? But in which, not only are Milwaukee number one in the Eastern Conference, right, they have the best record in the NBA, the first team to get 40 wins as well, lose at home to the Orlando Magic, though. Now, this Orlando Magic team was in playoff contention. They fell off heavily, especially with the loss of probably one of their biggest names on the roster. I won't say bigger than Aaron Gordon, but one up with Simmons leaving and Aaron Simmons going to the Philadelphia 76ers, who I think right now the Sixers are positioning themselves to win the Eastern Conference right now. They've not only just added Tobias Harris to the starting five, but they've added to the bench. Like, they're loading up to try and come attack the rest of these teams in the Eastern Conference. So I want to see what type of late push the Sixers can make to this season to try to catch up to, I mean, they're a game and a half behind the Pacers, 5.5 behind Toronto for the second seed, and Milwaukee has them by 6.5. But Milwaukee, by the way, just losing this game by 22, Orlando Magic team at home that doesn't really have all, well, they don't have all the pieces that they started the season with, and for them to go on the road up against an MVP caliber player and Giannis Antetokounmpo, it just made me raise my eyebrow that a 20-point loss, I can see them losing at home. I can see them losing by as much as 9 or if a late bucket went down, they lost by 11. Like, okay, but 20, that to me, that tells me the Magic had this game in hand. Like, they took care of business within this game. So, I mean, just your thoughts. You don't have to break down the game or things of that nature. And I know this is just one game, and it's like Milwaukee can give up ground. They can lose games as well. They've only lost 5 games at home at this point up until yesterday as well. So before the game, they only lost 4 games at home. But your thoughts on the Bucks? I'll be fair. Letting a game slip to the Orlando Magic, but in this fashion.
You know, the Bucks, to me, just this, yeah, again, this one game, but I think it's the way they lost the I think it's, I was trying to go through the stats here, and I think it was something like 50% shooting for, you know, 50 or 55% shooting for most of the team or less. We're looking at here, I think, you know, the only guys who were highly percentage shooters were the guys who were, you know, who only took one or two shots, you know, and then they made both of them or one of them. So everyone else is sitting there not making a shot for this team. You know, you only got a few guys in double digits. Giannis does not have the output you're looking for here in the Bucks starting lineup. You're looking for something that, you know, that resembles MVP caliber, and it's just not there. So,
okay, wait. Okay, wait.
Giannis didn't play last night.
He didn't play. I'm looking at it now. I'm looking at everything, and I'm trying to find his stat line.
And now I realize he didn't play last night. So that makes a little more sense, and it brings a little bit more. Now I can slap myself in the face for thinking that he had a horrible game. But, yeah, I mean, even though without Giannis, you still want to put up a performance. Again, you look at it, and you think, is this a team that without him is going to put up these kind of performances time and time again? You want them to be able to go through spurts of games without him, obviously. But in the event of of one of these, you know, you can't be losing to the Orlando Magic by 20, even with the absence of Giannis. Yeah, you want to. Yeah, you can lose a game. We're not saying that he's, you know, he's got to be there every single game. But the fact of the matter is, your shooting's got to be a little better. And it to me, it just looks like no Giannis, and there's just no hope for this team, which is kind of sad. But again, I'll watch this game. We can get more into it maybe next time around. See how this team reacts to not having him for maybe a few games. But yeah.
Just to be fair, now that I looked at the stat line and see that he wasn't available for the game, it makes it interesting. But I agree with where you came from, too. Just saying, what if? And I'm not even setting up injury situations. So don't, like karma, don't even do that. But let's just say foul trouble. Let's just say a team knows how to attack the bus, and knowing that Giannis does try to attempt to block shots and he misses and gets in foul trouble, this is what this team looks like if Giannis isn't on the floor. Like, they're losing to a team that's heavily under 500 and heavily under 500 away from Florida. So this Bucks team has to get it together to show that they are not fool's gold. And a lot of people that are coming out saying, oh, well, the Eastern Conference is looking better now. And to me, I still don't believe that they are the better conference, because there's still people that think that right now the Eastern Conference might have jumped the Western Conference. Yeah, okay. If that was the case, then there wouldn't be any selecting players Eastern and Western Conference in the All-Star game. They would just play East versus West. So we know where the heavy side of the NBA lands, especially with LeBron moving to the Eastern Conference. It's like not too many strong points on the Eastern Conference. But nevertheless, just looking at this game and all of the pieces and things that went down, Orlando attacked unbalanced. It's very interesting to see how they still have Terrence Ross on the bench and he's able to do work and shoot 50% on the floor as well to help this organization. But nobody really had an outstanding night. Isaac had the big night, scoring-wise. They had a double-double out of Vucevic as well. But I think it was more or less a balanced attack, and Milwaukee should be ready for this, especially with them having the best record in the league at home, losing to a team that I don't know if Nevada got involved, but they had one quarter where they scored over 30 points. Every other quarter, they scored less than 20 points in the game, every quarter except the second. So it looked like they were charged up, and even still, in the quarter they scored 30, Orlando scored damn near 40. They scored 39 points. So it was kind of like they took the ball out of the goal and tried to go down court and do what they did. So they were defeated in all facets of the game. So right now, this is like, I hate to say it like this, this looks like Giannis is the MVP. like they beat him like this. This is how bad they would look up against an Eastern Conference team. So that's like if any other team came to Milwaukee and played them without Giannis, they would be in a lot of trouble going up against whoever.
You could just look at the fact that they were on a 6-game winning streak. And, you know, let's see, 83 points last night. Go back the last 6 games from, you know, Friday moving backwards. 122 in a win, 148 in a win, 113 in a win, 131 in a win. Go down some more, 105 in a win, 115 in a win, 112 in a loss, then 108 in a win, 116 in a win, 118, and we can just keep going. This team looks 180 degrees different when Giannis is on the court. We can tell that now. 111. I'm going to keep going. 124, 106. They hadn't scored under 100 all through January and all through February. They may have lost, but they hadn't scored under 100. They were up there making points and winning lots and lots of games. This guy goes off the court. They score 83 points. Their shooting is horrendous. It's 37% from the field, 17% from three. They just look incapable of doing anything. And this is the Orlando Magic we're talking about. Not that Orlando Magic. Oh, yes, Orlando Magic is trash. So just sitting there and looking at this box score and not having – seen everything and looking at the highlights from, you know, the ESPN highlights that they have on this tab, it looks like a team that doesn't know what they're doing. And it's kind of scary, because if you do have to lose this man for a long period of time, how much does that hinder your positioning? Because we know they need home court advantage. The way that they play at home with this man is tremendous. But if they lose enough and they can't get home court, it's going to be interesting to see.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to jump around. I got one more game that I'm going to jump into, then I'm going to jump into, like, the thick of things and come right back to it. But another game where the Washington Wizards win their game in Chicago up against the Bulls, 134-125, in which the Bulls dealt two big-time players to the Washington Wizards. So it's kind of like that get back at the team to get back at them. You know what I'm saying? So Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker both were dealt from Chicago, in which I think it makes it even more personal for Jabari Parker, even though Portis had an interesting game as well. But Jabari Parker being from Chicago, knowing that he was just with the Milwaukee Bucks and knowing Milwaukee's like 45 minutes away from Chicago and him trying to play for the home team and things just didn't work out for the organization and they send him to Washington and the Wizards trying to make a run if they can to try and be one of those bottom eight seeds in the playoff bracket. And hopefully Scotty Brooks will turn it around because he has an interesting pieces that have come there. Even though, like, personally, I feel some type of way because Otto Porter was traded in that deal, being sent to Chicago, former Georgetown Hoyer, but they still have one in Jeff Green there as well. But knowing that this is that one of those redemption type of games, going in there and basically almost winning that game by 10, it has to be, like, gratifying to win that game up against Chicago. And to me, Chicago is one of the, I'd say, five teams that are trying to tank for Zion. And everything that happened yesterday was Zion. Zion had a game in Virginia up against the Duke Blue Devils, and LeBron was there with Rajon Rondo as well. So, but nevertheless, these teams are trying to tank to see who they can get the big guy to come to. But your thoughts on this game? I mean, the Wizards with, you know, a lot of interesting pieces. If they can make an interesting run, you know, I say throughout the entirety of the month of February because the All-Star break is coming next week, so it's not fair for me to say that. But they also still have, and a lot of people are going to pick on the name that I'm going to say, but they still have Dwight Howard. And Dwight Howard, his issues off the floor and, you know, health-wise, if he comes back and can give them, you know, strong minutes and strong stats, I think this helps this team in the Eastern Conference because, not to lie, I say the stronghold is within the Western Conference, but a lot of the big players are in the Eastern Conference. You got Joel Embiid and Dwight Howard. You also have Giannis Antetokounmpo too. So, and now with the addition of Marc Gasol with the Toronto Raptors makes it even more interesting too, with all of the top teams having an interesting big man in the paint for each of these teams. If Dwight can actually give these guys exceptional time and get back with them, it'd be interesting. But your thoughts with the Wizards pulling this out and hopefully Scott Brooks, and boy, do I know a great deal about him being a former Thunder coach. If he could turn this around and get some success to put them back in a playoff atmosphere in D.C.
Again, this is something that I'm going to look at. When I look at this, when I look at the Eastern Conference and you look from position 6 to position 11 being separated by 4.5 games. That's Orlando, Washington, Detroit going from bottom to top. Orlando, Washington, Detroit, Miami at 8, Charlotte at 7, and Brooklyn at 6. Can Washington at 24-32 with this trade, the way this team played, the vigor that they played with, can they come in and can they, you know, say get a 5-game get a 5-game push in their favor, take over the AC, maybe make some noise? I believe they can. This is a team that definitely now with the additions and the way they look like they're playing can come in and make some noise. Again, I don't know awfully too much the entirety of the trade and how exactly it's going to fit for both teams until I see a little bit more. And again, with the All-Star break coming up, everyone gets to, you know, go to the drawing board and see how it fits, get some more practices in, and you know, you get to spend some time with each other before you have to put it on the court some more. So it's going to be a little bit interesting to see. But, yes, I do believe Washington can bring some winning culture to their city, especially looking at the Eastern Conference and how, for like I said, from 6 on down, how wide open it can be come the All-Star break and directly after. If they have a breakout February, and say don't drop too many games, especially at home, they could be staring down the barrel of a 6 seed, possibly the outside chance of taking a 5th seed, depending on how Boston goes. It could be very, very interesting for Washington. It all really does depend on this February and say the first week in March.
Okay, so I'm going to get away from these games just for a little bit. I'll be back shortly. Just settle down. Please, nobody cry in the kitchen. I got tissues if you're going to cry. We got paper towels everywhere. So I feel some type of way about what just went down. We just seen the trade deadline come around and a lot of interesting moves. And this is what's funny about all sports. This bothers me. Like the, and I'm going to bring this up, and I'm getting personal, so what? So be it, right? But in all sports, especially football, basketball, but all of them, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, they all do it. When the trade deadline comes, it's like this is when they want to start moving players. Like right now, like let's hurry up and make the move before the deadline. How long have you been thinking of this? Or are you just doing this for, you know, satisfaction towards your organization or to unload a contract or, you know, just because things were going on right with the coach or, you know, the player had an ideal outside of the coach or the GM? I want to know what it happens because it's like everybody's making these quick moves right at the deadline or right before the time clock stops, you know. So, you know, a guy like Markelle Fultz, they hung on him since the draft. A year or two ago, and he couldn't get out of his own head because he couldn't get his form right for his jump shot. But everything that worked out in college, he looked awesome. They sent him to the Magic for Simmons and all of the pieces that just went to Philadelphia. You also think about all of the melee, and I'm going to bury these guys. And people feel a certain way about it, so be it. Like I said, I'm getting kind of personal about this one. But all of the, Anthony Davis going to the Lakers and him and LeBron, they got the same agent, and he's going to go to the Lakers. Oh, well, Anthony Davis said it during the season. He gets a $50,000 fine. And by the way, he got a $145 million contract with the Pelicans. You think he's worth about $50,000? Yeah, that hurt. Like that didn't hurt him at all, and he stayed put. But now you have him at two home games in New Orleans since you didn't move him. And your star, or let me get it right, your superstar is getting booed by the crowd. Like, he's getting booed by the crowd because you guys didn't move him. So he's there for the remainder of the season. And I don't know if that's a negative or a positive because they've actually been playing okay, but they've still lost games while he's still there. That's another issue in itself. Michael Beasley, one of the names that moved from the Lakers across the parking lot, if you will, or in the same across the locker room. I can't even say across the parking lot, but to the Clippers, and the Clippers waived him. So now he's another big name out there. The Knicks have also waived Enes Kanter, a personal favorite of mine while he was with the Thunder, hoping that the Thunder go and get him again because they traded him for Carmelo Anthony, and Carmelo did not work at all. So it was kind of like you got rid of Enes Kanter for a no-show vet that declined and didn't want to play defense. But now that I'm hearing about Enes Kanter, they said that the Celtics are interested in bringing him there, but that's adding to another situation where they have a lot of bigs and no one, like I just spoke on them having, you know, individuals or multiple personalities spoken by Marcus Morris, the twin, being another name thrown out there. Mirotić, another big name that was with the New Orleans Pelicans, like I spoke toward. Anthony Davis being moved to the Milwaukee Bucks. He has not played yet. I think they're waiting to see that he can get out there. Like I said, I mentioned before, Mark Gasol, even though the Grizzlies were talking about both players and Mike Conley and Mark Gasol, if the Grizzlies would have did that and got rid of both of these players at the same time, knowing that they were the face of that organization and helped them get to a lot of their postseason runs, I'd have to question altogether what Memphis is up to, the Grizzlies organization in general, because this was the Grizzlies organization that was in Vancouver and watched big names leave, you know, just like a big name like Mike Bibby and sending him, you know, to Sacramento. And everybody knows the run that he had with Sacramento and, you know, Chris Webber, just to mention. But it's interesting that a lot of these organizations keep following the same mantra of getting rid of a big name that's helped these guys and then try to rebuild, go through that 2 to 4 year lull, and if they have some spark in one of these seasons, it's like, oh, it worked out, then they fall right back into the dungeon of the NBA. But a lot of interesting moves happen at the trade deadline. Why are these teams waiting until the last minute instead of doing it in the middle of the season where these guys could, like, gel at the right time? You're trying to make these teams gel in front of the month of March. You know what I'm saying? Like, right when everybody's racing to make that positioning to get playoff aspirations, if you will, moving forward. But I mean, any of the moves that have caught your eye, any that I missed, because I know there's a ton that went out there, but I'm trying to do this, like, quick off the brain, you know, around the league, or if not any moves, especially the Anthony Davis situation, your thoughts on the trade deadline, especially some of the names that I've mentioned.
Sorry, excuse me, I had to sneeze. The only trade that I really – not the only trade. There's a bunch of trades that were really piquing my interest, but they didn't go through. Obviously, the AD trade to either New York or L.A., I think that's the one person in the trade situation that I would have liked to have seen gone through. I would have found it interesting to maybe have seen KP and an AD swap. That would have been an interesting event to see what else they would have given in New York and what New Orleans would have either possibly had to have given as well or you know, what kind of trade it may have been. But other than that, there's a bunch of trades. I mean, we can run down the list of them. And I really would like to get into what you brought up at the very beginning. And that's when you said, what does it feel? Why does it feel like it's, you know, 3 weeks from the trade deadline, 1 month from the trade deadline, and moving closer to the trade deadline, that everyone seems to be making deals? Again, not only making deals, but making, whether it be false rumors or actually putting players on the trade block that maybe you don't want to, you know, them to know or them to actually find out, because you know, you might end up with a 42-point loss to a team that you should have no business losing 42 points to. So, again, when you have things of that nature where whether it's the Lakers or whether it's any other team in the NBA saying these players are for trade, this player is for trade, what do you want? Oh, my God, the moment that a player is made available for trade and you have a team automatically naming whoever you want, and then saying whoever you want, but have a problem with a player trying to take his own money in his own hands and his own future in his own hands. It's just mind-boggling to me. Not only that fan bases and franchises in the front offices see no problem with a month full of rumors about moving a guy from his own home, from his family, uprooting everything, either cross-country, midway across the country. Sometimes it's across the parking lot. Sometimes it's convenient like that. But a lot of times it's not that convenient. And you're looking at it like they're just supposed to put up with this week in and week out, day in and day out, game in and game out. Am I going to be traded midway through this game? Am I going to be out here trying to put up the best performance I can to get a win for a team that in the middle of the second quarter I've been traded? Now, when I want to fight for my right to get as much money as I can, I'm selfish. Now, when I'm a player who hasn't, say, taken as much money as I could, and now I'm ready to hold out or I'm ready to wait for the best available team to pay me my money, I'm a selfish player who doesn't deserve anything, and my jerseys get burned. I think it's really hypocritical and really contradictory to listen to these fan bases and also these front offices do what they do, trade deadline after trade deadline, but expect players to withhold their contract and be outstanding team players and be the best that they can be and take every lick that the fan base gets them, and especially in the social media age when you've got the ability to say and do anything without any repercussions because you're behind an egg. It really just gets to me. Again, do I think that trading players is wrong? No, I don't. Do I think that a team getting rid of a player because he has unfulfilled his contract obligations, he's not living up to it, and they want to unload him, do I think that that's wrong? No. But do you spend 2 to 3 weeks rumoring about a guy because in hopes of getting another guy? Because he is the quote-unquote best thing coming. And at the end of it, every single player you said that you were going to trade is still on your team. They still have to look at you in the eyes, shake your hands, and accept the money you're going to pay them. Because if they don't, they're a hypocrite, they're selfish, They're a nothing player, and it's just getting a little out of hand. Now, I just believe that if there are trades like that are going to be if there are trades like what have been happening before the trade deadline over the last 3 weeks, they need to happen either right away when they get them. I believe that there are teams that get calls and hold on to that and say, well, we're just going to wait it out and see and wait it out and see. Yeah, I get that. But it's just too much of a mind game that these front offices play that needs to stop as it pertains to just the way that they handle these players. And then, of course, trickles down to the fan bases who believe that players are held to a higher standard, but for whatever reason, a franchise can do whatever they want. And as long as, you know, and they don't even have to win. I was going to say as long as they win, but there's franchises right now that aren't winning that are just doing some of the most preposterous things, Knicks teams included. So it's just really ridiculous. Again, but is there any specific trades? Sorry to get off on that tangent, but, you know, the Tyler Johnson trade from Miami, it does a little something for me. I think it adds a little bit to the Phoenix Suns. The problem with that is that it kind of, I think, takes us out of the Zion running, which now gives me pause for cause. And now I'm looking at this R.J. Barrett kid. And, you know, I think that R.J. Barrett might be the right fit for Phoenix and seeing how we can progress along from there. Any other trade, I really didn't see too much into. The Markelle Fultz trade, I think it was a great one for the Sixers. But to me, the way that the Sixers have loaded up now in their front five, and then like we said on the last show, if that kid Ben Simmons works on his shot, and he doesn't have to be the greatest shooter of all time, but he just works on his shot and he has a consistent jumper, it'll do wonders for his game, and it'll also do wonders for that team. And they're looking right now to a team on the upward end that looks to close in on a number one, number two seed in the Eastern Conference now with that starting five. So I think that's the most interesting to a whole team, what they've done all around to the trade deadline. They did it right. They did it good in my eyes. Again, New Orleans, you just look like giant fools for what you did, and now you're stuck with a player. I think, what was it, he had 30 points through three games, and they pulled him in the fourth. What are you thinking? What are you doing? You just look like one of the most laughingstock organizations ever, and you're in the same league with the Knicks. How does that feel? So it's just ridiculous the way that the New Orleans Pelicans have handled everything to do with AD and everything to do with the trade deadline.
Yeah, I don't understand what that does. I mean, okay, you hear him disgruntled, doesn't want to be there, right? And then you keep him, don't move him, or at least move him to a team that you don't want him to load up on, you know what I'm saying? And every game that you have at home, your star gets the ball and the crowd boos, but yet they paid the admission to come see him. Right? It's like, what? Like, are you serious? We can look at the New Orleans Pelicans team as constructed, and I'm not taking anything away from Jrue Holiday because I love the way that he played. Do you think they came there to see Jrue play? Like, he's the next biggest name outside of Anthony Davis? No, they came to see AD play. Like, so the guy that they came to see come play, he's getting negative attitude from the home team, let alone when he goes to another stadium or arena, excuse me, that they're going to probably – be doing all the chances they can to make it negative and cause more separation between the teams. So the remainder of the season is a wash. I don't think there's anything left for this Pelican season. Hopefully they can make things happen. That's probably why the biggest reason why DeMarcus Boogie Cousins left and went to Golden State for peanuts, because he really went there for, I think, like a $2 million or $5 million contract, knowing that he's worth well more than that. To quote-unquote get away from the organization, but also to ring chase. But a lot of the names that went around in the trade deadline, very interesting. A lot of players that have gotten waived because the teams feel like they can do better without the player. You know what I'm saying? So and definitely in Los Angeles, I'm waiting to see if they could bring anybody there, because if so, this may be, and I'm going to keep saying it until I see change. I mean, yeah, okay, the Lakers got to win at the buzzer up against the Celtics with Rondo. Out of anybody taking the game-winning jump shot, it was Rondo. winning the game for them. But this may be a season where not only do the Lakers miss the playoffs again, but LeBron will be out of the playoffs for the first time in a decade or more, better. Like, if they don't get this thing turned around, the Lakers could threaten to miss the playoffs again. And what was the move for? LeBron just came over there to just get a $157 million contract for 4 years and watch him be on a decline while you guys think that you guys are going to turn it around in the offseason and free agency and these guys don't get to jail? Like, I don't know. I don't know. So that was one way that I looked at that situation, especially the L.A. Well, that's just speaking in terms of the Lakers situation, especially with Anthony Davis and how Magic is. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on Magic Johnson. I can care less on how people look at this. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on Magic now because of the addition of LeBron James, the removal of the coach as well, to bring Luke Walton in there. Luke Walton doesn't have that team under his thumb like he wants to just because he came from Golden State, and now the players don't really respond to him, and now LeVar Ball is woken back up, and he's speaking negatively toward Luke Walton. It's a lot of issues that's going on in Hollywood and across the league, but again, I threaten the situation for all organizations. Why wait to the last minute to try to get these players to gel? If you see that there's a weak link, like, make it happen soon. Like don't wait to the last minute and make this drive happen, especially if it don't work out. What if it don't work out? I don't know. I'd rather see it before it breaks apart and we not play our best basketball because one player didn't fit the grand scheme of things. Okay, so the one game that I really had my nose dived in to was the matchup between MVP versus MVP, and when I say P like that, they know who I'm talking about, in which it was a showdown in Texas where probably the leading, I'd say the leading person that had a lot of attention toward the MVP voting at this point in time is James Harden because the tier that he's been on since December. I can't even say as of January because how long the streak has been going on, but this has been rocking since the month of December. James Harden has been going off and putting up numbers that are now rivaling Will Chamberlain's run, consecutive 30-point games. Goes up against the other MVP candidate in Paul George, and Paul George has been going on a significant tear all season long and playing the best basketball that he's played in his career as well. In a very upside-down, topsy-turvy type game, same scenario like Boston and Houston, now that I'm looking at it like this too, Houston at home, up 26, damn near 30 again, they lose this game by 5, and that 5 came through free throws at the end of the game. But this was a tight game once the Thunder got their act together within the third quarter, in which they went into halftime at 70, the score was 70-48 favoring the Houston Rockets. And when it came out from halftime, the Rockets got it to stretch to 26, and then the Thunder offense and defense came together at the right time. They ended up scoring 42 points in that third quarter and limiting the Rockets to a total of 20 total points scored in that third quarter, tying the score to 90-90. And that fourth quarter had to be one of the more electric quarters on both sides of the ball. I can't even do this because I'm a pro Thunder fan, because the things that James Harden was doing, despite having I don't even want to say stiff shoulder or a shoulder that bothered him, but he was still able to get the ball up and then knock down shots. And something that Paul George was saying, he wanted to match up with James Harden all night long, and they both went at it. Paul George ended up finishing with 45, Harden finished with 42. Well, let me say the line. Harden had 42 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and I see why, because outside of him and Chris Paul, I can't take too much away from Eric Gordon. I'm a baby Jordan fan and a Gerald Green fan as well. I like what they're able to do, but I think that Harden kind of took this game personal, knowing that he tried to put the shoulder load on his back, and it worked in the early portion of the game, and defensively after halftime, I think they had their breakdown. Which wins this game with 45 points and 11 rebounds. He had a double-double in this matchup. And knowing that the way that this guy's been playing defense as well, I just shake my head at everything that he's able to do. But in a phenomenal game that came down to the wire, it looks like that 5 points looked like the Thunder had it comfy, but like I said, there was a turnover late that ended up putting two more free throws on the board, and the Thunder were about too much, right? Well, too much for a shot to make a make or break situation in the game. And Russell Westbrook's streak continues as well on his ninth consecutive triple double, tying Wilt Chamberlain's NBA record as well. But your thoughts on this matchup? A lot of storylines on the line, a lot of MVP chatter. Has your position swayed on what Paul George has been able to do as of late, especially contending with what James Harden has been able to do in this season as well?
Again, I think we already discussed Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's the MVP. I'm just playing. No, when we talk about you know, the MVP, we obviously know it goes to the best player on the best team. So right now, it looks like it's going to be a James Harden handed down again. But the way that they seem to have lost yesterday, it may change some minds. If Mr. Paul George ends up continuing this 11-game run into, say, another 11-game run, I think it's in the last 11 games he scored 27 points as his lowest, and then trickle on in there from anywhere from there to 43, all in and only one loss. The way that Paul George has been playing, if he continues that, not only into the end of the season but into the playoffs, I think there's no other person that you can think of than Paul George as the MVP. The Thunder looks down and out. They don't look like the regular team, or they do look like the regular team. Russell Westbrook putting up triple doubles, but meaning not much in losses, you know, not winning as much. Then you insert Paul George in this 11-game streak and the way that he's been playing, able to take over and score some points, put up big points on the board and get them back into games and now keep them winning. You have to admire the way Paul George has been able to take the reins and just say, you know, put the team on his back. You go take your triple doubles. You go pad the stats. I'll make sure we get the points and win the game. That is exactly how it needs to be done for them two to succeed, and that's exactly what they've been doing. It's a scary situation when you've got two players that know what they do well and they just want to do it well together. Pause, but they just want to do everything together in hopes of victory. And when they see that, when they see that the way that you know, Russell Westbrook can get out there, get rebounds, get assists, get some points, you know, put it all out there. He just needs that little extra bit. Paul George comes in and gives him that. He gives him the 30 points that he needs, the 35, the 40, the 27, the 28, the 29, whatever he needs, he puts it in and he gets his back so that he picks up the little bit of slack and he just takes it over the top. That's MVP to me. That's most valuable. You don't have that. You have the Thunder of about 2 to 3 weeks ago that just doesn't look the same as what we've seen over the past 2 weeks from this team. It looks different. They look better. You know, not 2 weeks, but 11 games. They just look way better than the way that we've seen this team look throughout the season. And if they continue, you have to put Paul George in the MVP discussion because they're going to be a top team in the West. And then the discussion doesn't come, who's it going to be, you know, come Western Conference Finals, Houston or Golden State. You definitely throw in, you know, the Thunder in that conversation. And now you have a wrinkle. Who, you know, who's the odd man out? Who's unable to solidify that sixth or seventh game win to solidify that fourth victory and move on to the Western Conference Finals? Because we're going to see a matchup of one of these three teams to get to the Western Conference Finals in my estimation, and it's going to be interesting how it goes down, because if Paul George comes to play. You know, and Russell Westbrook comes to play, and the rest of those boys in those Thunder uniform, they come out and they come gangbusters like they have been. They're going to be a hard out. They're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be a team that's just going to be easy to, you know, rough run shot over. And in my opinion, this isn't a team where I anticipate their MVP type caliber non-Russell Westbrook player. We know who I'm talking about. Fold up under the pressure in the big games. Paul George doesn't have that in him so much as 35 did. So when you look at that, you have to look at the way that he's playing and the way that you anticipate him playing into the playoffs. and you say MVP, MVP all the way for Mr. Paul George. Again, if we see Steph or we see Kevin or we see James all go on the biggest tears that we've ever seen, and they run away with the Western Conference, and either one of those, either the Warriors runs away with Kevin Durant's performance or with Steph Curry's or James Harden's performance in Houston, and they run away with the number one seed, and they're the surefire lock, then there's some, pause for cause, even if the Thunder's sitting there at number two or possibly number three with a really good record and PG still performing. I think that one of those three guys just takes the mantle. I think the reputation gives it, but it would be to all disrespect to Paul George if he was able to get this team into a second place finish in the Western Conference, albeit one of those other teams just takes off because the way he's been playing.
I'll actually, concede to what you said, right? I'm going to spice this up as best as I can, right? And I'm going to be kind of personal and biased in this, too. If the Thunder can catch, which they are a game back at this point in time, if they can catch the Nuggets, I don't think they'll be able to catch the Warriors to get first place for the entirety of the season. I think they could threaten it, but the Warriors have to lose games. Now, I don't think that they'll lose a convincing amount of games. I think the Warriors are clicking. They have all of their pieces together, and especially with DeMarcus Cousins, they are barring the injury. I think that they will end up having the best record in the West at the finality of the season. But if Paul George can continue to play this way and get them to be a second seed in the Western Conference and hang on to it until the midpoint of April when the playoffs start, I think he gets the MVP. If he can continue to play at this range, I don't want to say, he has to score 30 every night and get his three steals a game and continue to get his average. If he does, if he continues his average numbers, then this is debatable across the board. But if you remove Paul George's situation from what the Thunder have done at this point in time, I don't think they would be at number three right now, especially with the poor shooting that Russell Westbrook is up to. His three-point shooting is at 25%. Him from the floor, he's at a record low in his career. And, his three-point shooting is bad, too, and he's taking bad, questionable shots, but everything else that he's been able to do on the floor, whether it's rebounding or getting his assists, Russ is leading the league in assists right now by more than two, the closest player that's next to him right now. So, he's doing other things on the floor to, keep the game within reach, but Paul George has been the guy that's been able to knock down the shot late, and hopefully the Thunder can continue to play like this without having these late-game scares so they don't have to need to have that late-game possession for a shot to be knocked down. Because right now they're winning in the Western Conference. They're third seed, even though it wasn't too much of what they did last year. I think they were a fifth seed last year, if I'm not mistaken, how that went down. So they were fourth seed. I got that wrong. They were fourth seed up against Utah, and they had the first two games in Oklahoma City. So they were a fourth seed, but they're one seed ahead of what they were last year. But the record looks better. And I hate to be brutal, but it's like, I guess with the removal of Carmelo Anthony, it's like now you see what this team has become. I still think that they need to try and pick up out in the free agency or one of the players that are on the waiver wire, if they can get another big. Because Nerlens Noel is the X factor, but if him and Steven Adams end up getting into foul trouble, that's another scenario. But they still need another big to just to be comfortable if both of those guys get into foul trouble, barring any health injury, and knowing how Nerlens Noel took a very scary fall recently, I want to say within a few weeks ago. So that's something they need to watch. But I'm saying this again, this is 2 weeks back to back that I'm putting out bold statements. But today on February 10th, 2019, if the Thunder can catch the Nuggets and hang on to the two seed in the Western Conference or through the entirety, because I don't think that they'll catch it. If they catch the number one seed, then we're going to argue until my face falls off. But I'll be fair. If he can keep putting up these guarding numbers and get the Thunder to keep this play turned around, even though I don't want to take too much away from Dennis Schroeder. Dennis Schroeder's been playing some awesome ball. Like he is the calm to the storm. It's a thunderstorm, but he is the calm to the storm. I love what Dennis Schroeder's doing. If you don't know what the German is doing, even though he's a black man, but he's from Germany, though. But whatever he's been able to do with this Thunder team has been excellent, and it's helped them out. If the Thunder can catch the Nuggets with their game back, the Thunder play tomorrow in a very interesting game, number three seed versus four seed. The Portland Trail Blazers visit the Thunder tomorrow. That's a must-see game. If they can get to the second seed and Paul George continue these numbers, I think it's definitely debatable. But also with Antetokounmpo having that game yesterday up against the Orlando Magic, definitely makes a bold statement for him. You can't forget what Steph Curry was able to do with the Warriors, because the Warriors had an interesting amount of losses while he was off the floor. Once he got back, the Warriors started clicking again. I can't take away from what Jokic was able to do with the Denver Nuggets, even though that's more team ball to me with what the Nuggets are doing. Everybody on that team is clicking at the right amount of time. You could just remove LeBron. LeBron has helped the Lakers win more games than what they won last year. They're a game above 500, but there's too many names that I could throw out there. I just mentioned Giannis as well. Kawhi Leonard, what he was able to do with the Raptors being moved from San Antonio last season and being in the Canada with the Toronto Raptors and having them at number two seed and having the second best record in the NBA as well is something to be considered. I wish it's horrible, but I wish Oladipo was able to play the remainder of the season because he would have had his name in the hat. But the Pacers are still playing well to sit in that third seed in the Eastern Conference. And the Sixers more or less are looking like a team scenario because Embiid has been playing some excellent ball. If I had to choose one, it would be Joel Embiid from Philly. And he's been putting up these double-double monster numbers. But now that they got, JJ hitting shots, Tobias Harris being here, I think it pulls away from what the efforts of, these guys are able to do. And Jimmy Butler's kind of, I want to say phased out, but you don't hear as much as his name as he used to because they have a full team now. Like, all systems are go, so it takes a lot of pressure off of these guys. But they are still a very interesting amount of number of names for this MVP ballot. But from what I've seen the last couple of games, especially in that match, I want to say a week ago, with Giannis and Paul George going at it and Paul George getting the better of Giannis, and then last night with Harden being at home and Harden having a 42-point night, and them being up 26 points, and Paul George said before the game, he told Terrence Ferguson he didn't want Ferguson to be Harden. He wanted him all night long, and it didn't work out in the success of him slowing Harden down, but he outscored him and made it tough late. And even when they try to switch on screens and picks, and the switch would be more or less with Russ, so it's making Harden work more. To get the shot off, whether it's fast as Russ or the length of Paul George. It's interesting what the Thunder are able to do at this point in time. So, again, like I said, on February 10th, I'm saying that if the Thunder can get to the second seed, unless they catch Golden State, a lot of people are saying, if the Thunder get to the first seed, that's the only way Paul George has a shot. I don't feel it's fair because it's too many guns on the Warriors team for the Thunder to catch them. But if he gets to the second seed and they have it interesting enough, I think Paul George can win the MVP, but again, this has to happen. It has to happen first, and this is a personal situation. I'm being biased. We're trying to be analytical about everything I've seen. He's having a career year in all his statistical categories, top to bottom. This is the best that he's been in his career. I don't know what else he can do. I don't know what else he can do. Continue to breed the winning culture, and Billy Donovan, I'm still a little furious with you, Billy, because it's like you still let Russ do what he wants to do out there on the floor, but it's breeding wins. So I guess continue to do what they're doing. But they're on a three-game winning streak. And, again, the Nuggets are on a three-game losing streak as well. They can't continue to let up too much rope in the Western Conference, even though they're a dangerous team. But I want to see how the finality of the season pans out. We're getting close. We're getting close to spring, even though I'm bad in the springtime. My allergies are horrible. All of the pollen is coming. But it's going to get interesting as we get close to another basketball Christmas. Okay, anything else that you would like to throw out there around this game or any other topic that you'd like to announce as well?
There was a topic. I want to get the number correctly here. Alliance of Football, American Football beats the NBA on NBC in overnight ratings nationwide with a viewership of over 2.9 million viewers. Americans love football. There's nothing else we need to talk about.
Okay, definitely. I hear you there. But we'll see how much storm that league carries and if it builds as high as – I won't say as high as the NFL. I won't do that. But if it gets the suspense of the football aficionado, I want to see what it carries into as time goes on. But we'll see. And definitely they're trying to give that sport a chance. Well, not that sport, but that venue a chance. Okay, so we are at the tail end of the brunch. We'll get a close out. Anything that you like to promote, shout out, as we shut it down here at the brunch, Nacho, you already know what to do.
Oh, man, just thank you for the show. Good show again. More fights coming up, more fight talk. Also, more in the heat of the season, basketball getting closer to the summer, and crowning a new champion. Hopefully, this is going to be an interesting NBA season, interesting fight season as well, with the St. Patty's Day and Cinco de Mayo, and also a little bit later in the summer, 4th of July fights that come around. Some big heavyweight names, also all the way down to, like we mentioned earlier, Lomachenko and King, as well as the Terrence Crawford and names and things of that nature. There's just so many big names that need to fight each other. Maybe we see the trilogy. Maybe we don't. Maybe we see some more fights for Canelo and Triple G this year. It's just going to be fun all around in the sports community. Even though football and the NFL form is gone. Again, I just mentioned the Lions American football started a couple games last night. Again, you can see the obvious decline in talent, but I think what's going to draw the people and what has drawn the people to that game in particular is the fact that the almost non-existent referees and the ability to actually play the game at its form. I think the interesting thing we'll have to see from this group is how low their age is willing to go, and if they're willing to take college freshmen into their league, get them paid, and get them learning football, acclimate at a higher level. But other than that, man, it's just interesting and great to see some other football avenues taking form and taking shape, because if we just have the NFL, then Roger Goodell and his goons are able to just run whatever they want to run. With some competition, it breeds maybe them bringing more of a – excuse me, maybe it brings a better product for us as fans in the NFL form, as well as watching maybe a lesser talented but an also worthy product in the AAF form. So I'm just excited all around. I love football. And I like the fact that it's old and not old, but veterans and guys that want to get back into the league showing off some of their talent on the grander stage of the national television. So, again, great for them, great for that. Again, NFL draft coming up. That's going to have interesting ramifications as we get closer to pro days and combines and the combine and things of that nature and who comes out on top. Again, very, very interesting at the top of this draft. I'm sure we'll get into it more. But the fact that the top three teams may not even have quarterback on the mind could be interesting to see some top three team trades, or we might have a defensive-heavy top five. We'll see. We'll get more into that. And I'm really interested. Thanks, Todd, for letting me come on again. And I'll talk to you next brunch.
Yeah, stay tuned to Nacho, because I know that's something that Roger wanted to start talking about. He wanted to get his shows based on the NFL draft and combines and things of that nature, where he's trying to get interviews as well. So I'm going to connect you two, because we're going to have to start to put this together as the combine is approaching and the month of April is coming around as well for the draft. So I want to set this up so we can be dynamic on that as well. So I'm going to connect the two of you so we can put that show together in the works. Yeah, I'm being biased, Sports City. TG MVP, that's the reason why they put the P at the end of that doggone. Let me stop, man. But that was a phenomenal comeback. Like, I'm not even going to lie, Sports City, when I seen that game going down, I was like, damn, man, we need this game to, like, stay in the hunt. Turned away, got back to it, because it was a speed game going on, get back to my cards, and it turned back around, and they tied up. I was like, wait, what happened? And then I had to see, like, the highlights of what happened in that third quarter. Cause I'm not going to lie, I was away because I thought it was over. I thought that Harden was just too hot to trot. And my boys convinced me, man. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. We'll be back Wednesday night unless we get something smoking. But stay tuned for everything that's going on every social media network, whether it's Twitter or Facebook. We got you covered. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know,
yeah. Classic hip hop shit. Dr. D-R-E, Rose and Jay. Let's get them. We started out mopping floors, and now we front row at the awards. Number one for the last 20 years. If you real.